It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Jenny Martins with the Fertilizer Institute talks about some of the factors helping to temporarily constrain fertilizer output.
Past couple of years with the pandemic, a lot of manufacturers in the United States, they've had to defer some maintenance that's critical and required. And so last summer, they had to take a lot of manufacturing offline to do those repairs. And so that's impacted supply that we're seeing today. And then I think finally, I would talk about just the natural disasters that had happened back in 2021 and 2020 that impacted manufacturing. So February 2020, winter ice storms you saw in Texas, and then Hurricane Ida that hit as well. So that hit Oklahoma, Texas, and Louisiana, and that's about 60% of total U.S. ammonia production, and so it affected their ability to keep manufacturing up for a bit.
This is the Agribusiness Report. It's in the books, but Commodity Classic held recently in New Orleans. Chuck Zimmerman reports.
John, first of all, introduce yourself. Tell us your name and what you do.
John Linder. I'm the chairman of the board of directors at the National Corn Growers Association, corn farmer from Edison, Ohio.
What I'd like to ask first is just a little bit about some of the specifics on the kinds of issues that you all are facing or dealing with right now.
You know, it's kind of interesting where the pandemic led us. You know, we have workforce issues that are providing some difficulties in supply chain, causing disruptions there and parts availability. So on the farm, we do feel that, and we're trying to be proactive, and we're seasonal, so we can maybe accumulate some things, but not all things. So supply chain disruptions is a big one. We've always advocated for no tariffs, free trade, right? So clearly we're talking to the fertilizer industry that's been taking up some of these countervailing duties. We see it, we all feel it in the pocketbook, but we see it as another supply chain disruption because we saw that last fall. And we don't want to see it again this spring. One thing to have a lack of supply to put it on in the fall when it can be properly applied. But come spring, planting, we only have such a small window, and it seems like it's going to demand a big effort to meet all the expectations we normally use to get the tools out there, the products to grow that corn, and maybe that crop protection. We're really looking at what kind of products we're going to be using. One of the issues we're having with those crop protections, obviously, chemical registrations, the acceptance of the herbicides, the toolbox that's so critical to us to use for crop protection is always being scrutinized. We've got trade disruptions because of it, so we're always working in that space, looking for that stability for the farmer on the input side and the market thereafter.
Well, we have this major issue going on in the Ukraine. How has that, what are some of the things that may have been affecting corn growers here in the U.S. or maybe potentially could?
Well, the energies, right? It's hitting the consumers. It's hitting, and you got to realize farmers are consumers. We buy everything retail. We get to sell it wholesale. You know, that's an old adage, but it's very true still today. So we're large consumers of energies. But when you break it down to an acre, we're very sustainable, very succinct with the kind of things that are important to the environment. But it's still the quantities that we need at the price that's commensurate to a profit. It's being really kind of a... Our expenses are chasing our profitability feverishly. We've got quite high grain prices, and it's just being chased feverishly by the cost. And some of it's just driven by that supply chain issue still. And that Ukraine is going to be what Russia's done has disrupted so many different commodities, energies, you know, feedstocks for food. And we're really glad that our commodities are fungible. And the fact that everything can be used in some form to create meat protein in the world, but it's uber critical in this world demand that we can feed a world as well as protect our nation as a good, having a good relationship with our consumer. How do we maintain that?
Well, depending on what happens with this invasion, as most are calling it, is it a potential that you might have some extra possibilities on exports?
Well, you know, there are folks in the world that are going to have to find a a displacement or a replacement for that displacement that they're receiving, because the exports coming out of the Ukraine, that region's about a third of the world's, well, at least 30% of the world's wheat supply. That's tremendous. It's not as, you know, we think of it as bread and cereals and that kind of thing, cakes and stuff. And so we don't think of that as being a staple. But so many places in the world, wheat is a staple. And so they're scrambling, folks in the world are scrambling to figure out what is going to be a reliable source for their feed and food source for their nation. And so, yeah, there's opportunity for us in the exports, but we have to protect our internal domestic markets and find that balance. And we don't really like huge swings. We like stable, predictable markets. Our consumers like to find that on grocery store, too, stable and predictable consumables.
How about when it comes to the word sustainability, because it's being talked about a lot more again than although we have for many, many years, but when it comes to corn growers, NCGA, is this a topic that you've been working with farmers on in terms of, you know, food buyers and others that are kind of looking for that sort of thing?
You know, we are definitely very focused. We started this back several years ago with our climate task force, rolled into our sustainability outlook, understanding the environmental impacts and then understanding, you know, what space we're working in today. And so we did a great deal of research with our corn sustainability advisory group to come up with a report for the period 1980 to 2015. And then establish goals to reach by 2030 that are a bit of a stretch, but attainable, that hit the major buckets for most people's definition for sustainability. But we could talk forever on definition of sustainability. But, you know, it's three-legged stool: economics, environmental, and social. And that social piece is a consumer. So we find that we need all three of those categories to be addressed in our sustainability efforts. And we're working on alliances. You know, we've got some efforts going with USB and pork right now, soon to be released. So listen up toward the end of the week, right? And working with our partners in the government is too. So, you know, my theme was to leave no stone unturned when I was president. Now, let me share with you what we found most times when we started looking. We found that any success, any opportunity was going to be relationship related. And there's so much cross-commodity outreach in trying to work together because it's one farmer.
Speaking of relationships, you have a great one with the Renewable Fuels Association, and they presented NCGA with, I guess, their industry award this year. Talk a little bit about the relationship and what, you know, that award means to corn growers.
Well, it's such an honor to be recognized by some of your partners, your long-standing partners that you've worked for decades. You know, we can do more with corn than just produce food. We can find a balance in managing the whole portfolio of use for corn, because corn can be used in over 4,000 products, and we're finding new uses every day. But there are efficiencies in feeding and the likes that have permitted us to use corn for the liquid fuel transportation market, and we have discovered over its use that the models have predicted its carbon footprint, if you will. We're wrong. The models are wrong. Ethanol, corn-produced ethanol, is so much more friendlier for the environment, actually achieves some of the goals that this administration is trying to achieve quicker than we can actually go start new ones. And so it's here today, and that's what we've been able to do with the Renewable Fuels Association. We helped establish the markets, the build out of the program, getting into the right conversations in Washington, D.C. to find the policies that make all this work. It's time for all those updates. So we're still working long arm to go to D.C. and advocate through the vehicles like the Next Generation Fuels Act to find the space for in the gas tank for a future and longer life to the liquid fuels market. And Renewable Fuels has been a great partner for us.
There are certainly some people that are actually wanting to abolish the renewable fuels standard, and doesn't seem to make a lot of sense to most of us that know this business well. How does NCGA feel about some of that that's going on, and what would you say to the administration about actually finishing and getting that RFS to where it's supposed to be?
Well, I heard one of our grower leaders say today, it would be really nice to get a call from the president and say, hey, do you realize if we rolled out E15 in short order, we could replace that amount of petroleum or crude oil that we import from Russia, and we could be self-reliant again, and how much better for the environment. So we'd love to have those conversations. We'd love to have that recognition. But it's kind of an unwieldy space to be the President of the United States. I would not want that position. So you're not going to find us badgering anybody for what they have to do, the decisions they make. We're just going to help lead the conversation where it needs to be, because we have no bias. We have no political affiliation. We are truly advocates in all spaces. So, but we need to be in the conversation, and that's a difficult one we really want to be in, to share the value that we can bring.
Well, it's getting near time for a new planting season. Seen lots of things on social media. What's your outlook, or maybe just especially where you farm?
We've got excess moisture right now. I'd love to share it with some of my friends in the central part of the nation that are really dry and really looking forward to the opportunity to see the rainfall to keep the crop going. But, it's too early to predict that. I can't even predict that we'll have a delayed spring, even as wet as it looks at the moment. That can change so quickly as the weather warms and the sun shines. And so we're really thankful as farmers in Ohio to have excess moisture at this point. It's a little better place for us to start. Now, optimist. I think we all are, right? I think you give us the right window, we'll get the crop in, and it's going to be a good year for corn in this nation. We need a lot of acres because there's a lot of demand. And as you said earlier in the conversation, what's Ukraine? What's that loss? How's that impact us? So if we're going to be critical players in the world, we're going to need to be able to raise a crop, and we're optimistic that we'll get to do it. We'll find ways to get around the supply disruptions, and we'll find the crop care, and we'll continue to be in those conversations so we can use those tools to be sustainable going forward.
Well, thank you very much, John, for taking a couple minutes to visit with me here. We're at Commodity Classic, taking place in New Orleans.
Thanks, Chuck. It's the Agribusiness Report.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
At Golden Harvest, our best skill is knowing how to listen. From our Gold Series soybean and game-changing corn portfolios to our expert insights housed in the Illuminate digital agronomy platform, everything we offer is an answer to what we've heard from you. This is how we listen.
Copyright 2021 Syngenta. The trademarks or service marks used herein are the property of a Syngenta Group company. All other trademarks are the property of their respective owners.
Welcome back to the Agribusiness Report. Heard from Chuck Zimmerman, who had John Linder, chairman of the National Corn Growers Association.
We all want to work quickly and effectively on the farm. Livingston Machinery has the all-in-one machine to make it happen. The MLT 840 telescopic handler from Manitou with a max capacity of 8,800 pounds is the ideal choice for all of your rough terrain farm handling tasks, including feeding, harvesting work, and bulk loading. With a variety of attachments and an impressive 115 horsepower, your to-do list never dwindled so fast. Learn more at livingstonmachinery.com and to find a location near you. Livingston Machinery, 24/7 service for your 24/7 operations.
United Ag is one of the largest association health plans to offer healthcare benefits for the agricultural industry. Their mission is to bring innovative healthcare solutions to agriculture by meeting their members' employee benefit needs. Join today and take advantage of the premier benefits offered by United Ag. United Ag is committed to contributing to a strong and healthy ag industry. For more information or to join, visit www.unitedag.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to our comprehensive look at agribusiness news, markets, and weather. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.
When it comes to farming cotton in West Texas, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers rely on Delta Pine brand cotton. Bred, tested, and made in West Texas for West Texas growing conditions. Strong is a legacy all its own. Protect yours with strong cotton from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
If you don't push yourself, how will you know what you're really made of? Cotton Research and Promotion Program works to develop innovative performance technologies that redefine cotton's capabilities and helps athletes push themselves further. Cotton Incorporated is working hard to educate consumers about cotton's versatility, especially in the athletic apparel market. Forever Cotton. Visit cottonboard.org/forevercotton. It's the Agribusiness Report.
It seems the biggest issue that farmers are raising with Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack these days is this.
Fertilizer costs have become incredibly expensive, and we have to understand why.
And he told one group, basically,
it's a tremendous demand pitted against a limited supply.
And for more on that, we spent part of Ag Day on the Mall in Washington talking with the Fertilizer Institute's Jenny Martin. She says the high demand is coming when almost everything else that's happening is either reducing the supply or raising the prices or both. On the price side, for the folks who make fertilizer, the biggest cost in that process, natural gas.
And in 2021, natural gas prices doubled, so that's really going to have an impact.
Especially as global trade in fertilizer is being restricted.
With China's export ban, with the situation in Belarus and Russia, with the sanctions.
Plus, we've got the rail strike in Canada, which has reduced supplies coming into the U.S. from there. And Martin says those are just a few of the factors affecting fertilizer supplies and prices. Gary Crawford, Washington.